Accession number 18570, Real One.
Mike Bendix, Real One. Where were you born, please?
I was born in London.
Which year was this?
This year was 1925.
Did you grow up in London?
No, although I was born there, I went and lived for the first 10 years of my life in Sussex.
But you were telling me that you regard Norfolk as your family home.
Well, in 1956, I went up into East Anglia, and I've only been in Hampshire for the last 3 years, so that as I'm age 74 and I have no contact with where I was born, I've always regarded myself as an East Anglian.
And where were you educated?
I was educated at Eton and Magdalen College, Cambridge.
When did you leave Magdalen?
I left Magdalen at the end of 49, because we only had 2 years to get the tripos in.
And, in fact, when war broke out, you were only a teenager.
Yes. In fact, when I touched down in Normandy, I was 19, so I shouldn't really have been in the army at all, because I had a half lung out when I was 10. I had some growth there, but they never took my shirt off at the medical and passed me an A1, so I think that I was very lucky to get away with it.
Where did you spend the early war years?
We spent the war years in Sussex, but not where I'd been lived all my previous life. We were evacuated because we were overlooking the Rumney Marsh over by Rye. And so it was at Billingshurst I spent.
Did the war affect you much in the early half of the war?
Well, the school was bombed, and I can remember being blown off my seat and all the windows coming in. The school had a home guard, so that in the holidays, one had to join the local home guard, which in my case was Billingshurst. And we had the Canadian division billeted all round us, and it was terrible seeing them after Dieppe. They were in a terrible state.
In what sense?
I think morale, really. They were really down. They couldn't really see that they'd been given a possible target at all.
Did you speak to any of them?
Oh, yes, I did. I knew them all very well. We used to have them in for parties into the house and things like that.
But they seemed dejected?
Yes. And in a way, resentful.
Who did they seem to be blaming?
I think they didn't think very much of Lord Mountbatten, who'd been in charge of the whole thing.
Did it create any anti-British feeling, do you think?
I think it was more towards the high command rather than England.
You said that you were blown out of your seat at Eton. During this air raid, were you taking a lesson?
No, I was doing my prep, because the bombs came at about 6 o'clock on a winter's eve.
Do you remember which year that was?
I would say it was 1940 winter, when the Blitz was on London. we always assumed that the chap was just unloading bombs he hadn't dropped, because two came onto the middle of the school.
Where did they strike?
They hit the building surrounding the chapel, and they demolished two of the master's houses in the centre of the school.
Were there any casualties?
No, there were not.
How frightening an experience was it for you?
Well, I suppose being a small boy, I think I thought it was rather exciting, I'm afraid. One felt part of the system, you know?
Were any bombs, did any bombs fall on Eton or Windsor?
The town, you mean?
Yes.
Not as far as I know.
What did public morale seem to be like in those early years of the war?
Oh, very high indeed. During the weekends at school, we used to have to go and work in factories instead of playing games. And I worked in a high-duty alloy factory in the foundry in Slough. And they were absolutely marvellous. They were a bit suspicious of an Etonian, as you may well imagine. But when you're all stripped to the waist and shoveling black sand, it's a great sort of binder, and they accepted one as a friend.
Why were you stripped to the waist?
Because it was so hot in the foundry.
Was this unpaid work?
Yes.
How much of it did you have to do?
We did either Saturday or a full Sunday. It depended. And other boys were working in other factories or with the forestry people up in Windsor Forest, that sort of thing. And we had to look after a rabbit farm and the house allotment, and as well as playing games.
Was this an obligatory thing that the administration in the college told the boys to do?
Yes, the headmaster felt that it was the least Eton could do, apart from the home guard aspect I was talking about. We had our own school home guard. And I think he felt that it was part of the war effort, and he also offered children from Slough free education at the school as well, a limited number. I can't remember how many.
How did that work out?
I think it worked out quite well. Not all the places were taken, because there was still corporal punishment in the private sector, and many of the parents didn't like that idea. I can't say I blame them.
Do you think that the factory work did any good to the war effort, or to you personally?
Well, I suppose I always hope it helped in the factory. And me personally, it was one of the best lessons in getting on with people, because I knew I'd be very unpopular to begin with. And then, without seeming vulgar, I realised we all had to go to the loo in the morning. And it was a big, wonderful experience. I got to love them very much.
Was it shift work, or...?
No, we reported at 9 and left at about 6, I think. But, of course, the real treat was the food in the factories was so marvellous. So I hadn't seen a leg of pork, for goodness says, how long, and I remember the first time, there it was on the canteen table. It was wonderful.
Was it better than college food?
Miles better, yes. I think we were all getting sick of rabbit.
And you say you're a member of the Billingshurst Home Guard.
That was in the holiday times only. We, because of the Eton Home Guard, it was mandatory that you reported to the nearest Home Guard.
So you were a member of both?
Yes. Attached to one.
Was there much difference between the two in personnel and equipment and training and so on?
I think because of the, it was then called the OTC, I think. I think Eton Home Guard was better, in a better position to handle weapons because of Certificate A and all that, which the Billingshurst Home Guard, of course, hadn't got that advantage. But the morale was tremendous.
Did you have a personal weapon each?
Yes. We took our rifle with us, but no ammunition, of course. They had that.
How much use to you from the point of view of military training was membership of the Home Guard?
To be honest, not really very much, I don't think, because theirs was a totally different role. They were very much trained to be on the defensive, whereas I think that wasn't so in the army, you know.
What kind of duties would the Home Guard be put to?
We're at Billingshurst or...
In either.
Well, you would guard vantage points, thus relieving the police, I think, more than anybody else. Could be a bridge, it could be a railway crossing, an entrance to a factory, anything like that.
Did you think at that time that the Germans would invade?
The fear of invasion, whatever anybody may say, was intense in the country, the south anyway, until about 1941, the end of. I remember, particularly in Sussex, feeling, I wonder if the church bells will ring tonight. And there was always that little thing niggling away. Right through until the end of 41.
What kind of a performance do you think the Home Guard would have put up if the Germans had invaded?
I think probably it would have been of nuisance value, but I'm not quite sure that they were equipped to deal with armour or anything like that.
Did you experience any other weapons apart from rifles with a Home Guard?
Yes, there was the Northover projector and the Blacker Bombard, I think it was called. They were very, you could have imagined them at Waterloo, really. So I don't think they would have been much use.
What exactly were they?
Well, the Blacker Bombard lobbed a great big explosive shell, rather like a mortar. The Northover projector, you could put bottles into and you could fire bottles and things out of it. But there was no ammunition that I can remember. It was just pretty amateur stuff.
Fire bottles?
Well, you sort of fill them with sand, and I never could quite see the use of them. I think we were more frightened of them than the enemy would have been.
So you meant to shower the enemy with broken glass or
something? That sort of thing, I think, was the idea.
Did you ever listen to Lord Haw Haw?
I once or twice turned him on really for a laugh, I think. We all thought he was nuts, you know.
And what about listening to Churchill? Did you ever do that?
Oh, yes, you bet. Wouldn't have missed a word.
What effect did he have?
Oh, you just felt as long as he was there, you were going to win. At times we didn't know how, but the morale was enormous. I think his visits to the East End of London immediately following a night's raid, you know, all those things.
Now, can you tell me about joining up yourself, please?
Yes, I went to High Wycombe for the medical, which we've just referred to. And then I went to the, as a private soldier, to the guards depot at Caterham. I can remember the sergeant on duty asking me where I wanted to go, and I said, inside, please. And he said, you'd be better off next door. And this in fact was a lunatic asylum. I always remember that.
This was his bizarre sense of humour, was it?
Oh, yes. The only talk you would laugh at yourself.
When was this?
That would have been March 43.
Were you able to laugh at yourself, or did you take it seriously?
Oh, no one should learn to laugh at yourself, yes.
What was your basic training like?
Absolutely first class. Marvellous instructors.
In what sense?
I think the rapidity with which one was made to handle weapons and not be afraid of them, I mean, hand grenades and all that sort of thing, they were extremely tolerant. But the only ones they weren't tolerant with were those that just weren't trying. But I was amazed at how patient they were.
Did you get recruits who weren't really trying?
I think there were one or two who... I think I was a volunteer, you see, and I think it was harder for the conscripts, really. But they soon... Very, very few remained Bolshevik or anything.
So the basic training was at Caterham?
Yes, and then to Pirbright. We did 16 weeks at the depot, and then we did, I can't remember how long, at the training battalion, where you do stuff on the field firing range and that sort of thing, more advanced field training, platoon attacks and things like that.
Had you always had the ambition to be in the Guards?
I'd always wanted from the very word go to be a soldier. And my stepfather was in both wars in the Coldstream. And that's how the regiment was chosen for me, I think.
And after Pirbright?
Well, then I was called for and told that they thought I was perhaps of officer material, and I went to a pre-op due on Rootham Hill in Kent, 10 days, then to the Royal Military College for 4 months, which included a survival course up on the top of Snowdon in December. So it was quite tough going.
What did you have to do on the survival course?
Well, just live off what you could. You had your what rations you could carry, and It made you realize how much you could do with not very much water or food.
How long did you have to stay on the top of Snowdon for?
Well, thank goodness it was only 3 days.
Did you forage for food?
Well, there's nothing to forage for, so we eked out what we'd been given, sort of emergency rations. I think the idea was that if you did escape, or if you were trying to get away from being caught as a prisoner, then you could exist on these rations. It gave you confidence in them.
What condition were you in at the end of the 3 days?
Absolutely knackered, I'm afraid. But still, I was only 18, and I suppose one's very resilient then, isn't one?
Were you in any way ill?
No. And the extraordinary thing about my lung condition was I never went sick, ever. In the army, whilst I was in it.
Was your lung condition discovered eventually by the army authorities?
I'd signed on as a regular in 45, because you couldn't become a regular soldier until the war ended. And then in 1947, I broke my leg on the field firing range. I was then an instructor, and had to have it pinned, and of course, when I came to, they said, what are all those scars? You weren't wounded, were you? I said, no. And they said, well, we're downgrading you to permanent category C, which absolutely wrecked my chances of remaining in the army. The powers that be said that they couldn't overrule a medical decision like that, even though I'd never left the field of battle from Normandy to the end. But Manny Shinwell, in the end, took an interest, and he wrote me a letter which said that if I went up as a regular soldier to university, would I resign when I came down? And that's what happened. I didn't know where I was going, but it was Magdalen Cambridge that got me. And I thought that was a very fair thing, although I was absolutely broken-hearted because I didn't want to leave the army.
How did Shinwell come to be involved?
Well, because the colonel of my regiment was so incensed that somebody who'd been through the campaign and never gone sick should be penalised in this way. I was as fit as a fiddle.
So Shinwell was involved as a minister?
I think he was called the war, Minister of War or something in those days.
Coming back to your training in England,
yes,
before Normandy,
mm-hmm.
What happened after you were on the top of Snowdon?
Well, then they had all the passing out parade and everything at Sandhurst. All the tradition and everything. And then I joined my regiment training battalion as an ensign in January of 44 at Pirbright. I then had a month's training, and then I joined the 5th battalion when they were up in Yorkshire, and we did a lot of training up on the Yorkshire Wolds with tank operation. And then moved down to Eastbourne in about April, which then got sealed off, as you probably know, because it was from there that we took off for Normandy.
Which unit were you in by now?
I was in the 5th Battalion Coldstream Guards as a platoon commander, And they were the infantry battalion, and the 1st Battalion were the Guardsmen in Tanks, which were Sherman's, and one regiment of Cromwell Tanks.
Which platoon did you have?
I had number 3 platoon of number 3 company.
What were the guardsmen like in that platoon?
Well, the Guards Armored Division had been held back, I think always, in training for the Second Front, as it was called. And therefore they'd been together a long time and were older than I was. It was very difficult for me, at the age of 19, to be put in charge of 36 tough guys. They were mostly Geordie, sons of Geordie miners and that sort of thing. But I learned that if you showed them that you cared for them and that you weren't going to be stuffy and you would say that one had got a lot to learn from them as well. And we seemed to get on fine.
Did the Coldstream Guards then recruit particularly from northeast England?
Yes, I would think it recruits basically from Durham and from Northumberland and the whole of Yorkshire. That's really its hunting ground. And of course the borders around Coldstream.
Now, can you take me through the preparations for going over to Normandy, please?
Well, we, of course, will follow in troops. I wish I could remember the exact day we went over, but I think it could have been D plus 6, something like that. But pretty soon after the Normandy landings, we were split up, and the infantry went from New Haven, and all the vehicles went from Tilbury. It was very rough. There was one attempted E-boat attack on us, but there was I think it was a Hunt-class destroyer, and dropped depth charges and all the rest, and we never did see what was attacking us. We then got to Mulberry Harbour after 15 hours, and my platoon always teased me that it was the only time they saw me go forward willingly, because I was so seasick and wanted to get off the boat. I think we all felt the same. We weren't given seasick pills, as some authors will have. You know, the fact that we were, but we weren't.
So you landed D plus 6?
D plus 6, yes. But I can't remember if she was a war spite. But there was a battleship firing broadsides with guns fully raised, still doing that, whilst, even on D plus 6. And I was told afterwards they were firing at targets 15 miles inland and that sort of thing.